Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fantastic on this beautiful, kind of chilly Sunday night. How have you been?
I'm okay. I'm better now. Wasn't so great for a while. We both kind of had the sickness that's going around, so we haven't been able to record in several weeks.
Yes, I've been on vacation. I did take a three-week trip to the Philippines. If our listeners don't know, it's basically a tropical island over in Southeast Asia. The highs was about 88 every day, and the low was about 81 every day. And it's beautiful over there. I had a ton of fun. The only sad part is that I had to come back home because I had so much fun there. But coming back home was good too, but I did pick up something from the airport, I think, on the way home, and spent the last 3 weeks trying to get over that. And then, in fact, I'm still not completely over it, but I'm good enough to record now.
Yeah, you got it like a week before I did, and then all of a sudden I start coming down with it, and it lasts. I mean, it's been over 2 weeks now, and I'm like just starting to feel better now.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty rough there for a few days. A lot of coughing, runny nose, but it's the fall time, getting close to winter. I'd rather have my sickness now and be done with it, and that way I can enjoy the holidays instead of being sick during the holidays.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I agree. And it could always be worse. So
absolutely.
So we're back at it.
And I think we have some excellent stories for you guys tonight. I mean, I am super pumped about all four stories that we have tonight. And I think we're just going to get right into it. And I think Laura's got the first one for us.
Yeah, sounds great. Alrighty. So the first place I chose was the Hoiobasiu Forest in Romania. And this is a pretty popular one. Maybe some of you know it, maybe some of you don't, but that's okay. I'm going to tell you all about it. It is located in northwest Romania, and it's known as the Bermuda Triangle of Transylvania. And it covers 250 hectares, or for us English people, it is 618 acres. And locals avoid this area, but however, it attracts many people who want to meditate or do yoga here, and even attracts witches and also American tourists, which I thought was kind of funny. I'm like, I don't know, what? Just American tourists, but okay. But anyways, there has been actual scientific research done in this forest to try to find out why there's such strangeness. There is magnetic fields, electromagnetic phenomena, high radiation levels that all have been detected. The trees have also been studied by scientists because they grow at these like weird bent angles, and it's so that they grow bent to the side and in a spiral clockwise direction. If you just Google a picture of this forest, the trees will come up and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I tried to look up the very origins of this forest, you know, what's the history, and all I could really come across was that there is evidence that there was a settlement in this forest dating back to the Neolithic period of 6500 BC. And it's the oldest settlement in Romania, and it's thought that about 200 Romanian peasants were killed in this forest. And that is the theory on why there's so much strange activity there. I tried to find why these Romanian peasants were actually killed, and I couldn't come up with an answer. It just kind of, when you Google a forest, it gives you so much of the present day hauntings or things from the 1960s that it doesn't really focus too much on the past. The forest, Hoiobasiu, it's actually named after a shepherd who had a flock of 200 sheep, and the sheep and this shepherd all went missing and they were never seen again. So that's like the start of some of the weirdness. There's also another story of a young girl that goes missing in the forest for 5 years. One day she just reemerges from the forest, and it looks like she has not aged one bit. Her clothes were perfectly in mint condition, as if only no time passed when she went missing. So this brings up the theory of are portals in this forest causing visitors to disappear and reappear. In the early 1960s, biologist Alexandra Sift had heard about the strangeness of this forest, so he decided to do some research in this woods. He focused on the light and magnetism phenomenon. He gathered substantial photographic evidence, but it all went missing after he went passed away in 1993. Is that a coincidence that it went quote-unquote missing? Because in 1968, Emil Barnea, a military technician, photographed a UFO hovering over the forest, which is known as the clearing. And the clearing is this circle in this forest that it's like an oval patch kind of area that absolutely nothing will grow in this area. And he lost his job. He got fired for photographing this because he was in the military. And I don't know exactly where he put this photo out to, or if he like took it and went back to, you know, his officers and was like, hey, I have this picture. Well, he got fired for doing that. So that's a little suspicious to me. And the soil has even been tested. Scientifically, they have no reason why nothing will grow in this spot called the clearing. Most of the UFO sightings in the forest were from the 60s and the 70s. Still to this day, there are reported weird lights, aliens, and there was this one time there was this couple out in the forest and they saw a shining silver disc and they were able to actually take photos of it. And these photos were published in newspapers, but skeptics blamed it on weather balloons and odd lighting. Investigators looked into the sighting and there were no weather balloons or anything else in the sky that day that the photo was taken. The photos were tested and they were not altered in any way. There's other things that have been seen in this forest, such as ghosts of soldiers, orbs, glowing green eyes that are seen peering through black fog, and the spirits of the murdered peasants are also seen there. There are sounds of deer or horse hooves, and if there's pictures that are taken in the forest, you can see faces in the orbs on the photos. Laughing women and screaming young girls have also been heard, as well as other strange noises. Visitors have also reported rashes, burns, bruises, scratches, nausea, anxiety, and feelings of being watched and migraine attacks. Despite people going missing, losing track of time is another one. People will enter the forest, go missing for hours, and then return with no recollection of their time in the forest. Electronics, including cell phones, will not work. And here's another one. I know you're going to like this one. There is even a woman in white story.
A reoccurring theme, of course.
Yes. So the story goes, a bride-to-be and her fiancé go for a walk in the woods, and all of a sudden, she set off on a different direction than her fiancé. She disappeared into thin air, and he never saw her again. Her spirit wearing a white wedding dress is reported to be seen, but only by women and children. So, the last thing I came across was that in the year 2009, the TV show Destination Truth was filming in the clearing that I had told you about. A sudden flash of light happened, and one of the crew members named Evan went flying from one side of the clearing to the other. He said that before he got thrown, he heard, quote, strange female voices, end quote, behind him. So that's what I got for that. It's like a whole lot of stuff. You know, the nausea, anxiety, burns could possibly be from high radiation. But I also don't know where bruises and scratches would come from.
Sometimes with, if you have radiation sickness, you will bruise very, very easily.
Really?
That's one of the, that's one of the things that could happen. But I was going to make a quip that when are we going to book our plane tickets. We need to go. We need to go there. We need to spend the night there.
Yeah. I don't know that I want to. I mean, I'd go there for several hours for sure. I mean, maybe even longer if we lose track of time. That's true. Who knows?
We could go in and then 2 years later come out and be like, where? Back to the hotel or the car or whatever. Go back. The car's like all rusted out. And something weird's going on. Kind of like, remember the other day when we were talking and you looked at your laptop and it had the wrong time? And you were like, what is going on? That would be what it would like, right?
Exactly. That was the weirdest thing ever because I plugged my phone in and I left my laptop on my bed and I went to get a shower and I come back and I open up my laptop and I left my phone on the charger because I don't need my phone if my laptop's right in front of me. So I open it up and it says, the date says the next day. And it's like several hours, like well into the night, like 2 o'clock in the morning, I think it said or something. I don't remember what I said it was, but I'm like staring at it. And I'm like, how the hell long was I in the shower for? I'm like, is there missing time? Is this a time slip? Like, what the heck is going on? So I was like, there's no way it can be that late. I go to restart my computer and I'm just hovering the mouse over the restart and it automatically just restarts before I even click it. So that, to me, that was another weird thing, but I don't know if that's just like a feature on the computer that it, if you hover over it so long that it would, it was just really weird.
I think it's just probably a bug in Apple's operating system, to be fair, but.
Right before I clicked restart, then it flashed back the correct time and the correct date.
Maybe you hit a glitch in the matrix.
Something. It was so strange. It was so weird. Freaked me out a little bit.
Now, just be, you know, think about, you know, in that particular context, now think about if you were missing 2 years.
Oof.
You know, you think a couple hours is weird. Or you come out of the forest and it's November 2025.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really fun to go there. And like, if you had access and the knowledge to go through and really, I know you said they've already tested the soils and you know, saw the magnetic mm-hmm. field, but like, just to be able to like, do that kind of testing there, like if you had the knowledge and the equipment to do that, just to like try in different places, you know, like, you know, if it's a circle that's, you know, X amount of feet around, pick some that are right at the very edge and just go like another foot in is what it looks like and another foot the other direction and go up and see what it's like. I think that would be super, super interesting.
I would totally be down for that. Yeah, but the whole disappearing thing, that really trips me out. That sounds like a freaking nightmare. That's not something I'd ever want
to
do.
No. To be fair, you're right there. Maybe we'll just go for an hour at a time. You know, go for an hour, get our stuff, get out, come back the next day, do an hour, come back. I think that sounds like a way better idea than being stuck in a forest for 2 years. Because just think about – so think about this, though, like, If you had a time slip for 2 years, would you be hungry afterwards?
I don't know.
I mean, from your frame of reference, you were only gone for, you know, X amount of time, but the world's moved on 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kind of a tangent,
But I mean, I have so many questions because then I'm thinking like, well, what if the time period that you felt the dimension or wherever you went, only a short amount of time passed there somehow, because I'm thinking, well, if you didn't eat for 2 years, you'd be dead. Mm-hmm. But then what if somehow it's like some kind of other dimension and the time goes very quick? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's above my pay grade.
It's way above my pay grade. Yeah. Very good story, though. It's got a bunch of interesting happenings going on there. Well, I was going to say, it kind of seems like it's been like things happened in the 50s and 60s. I mean, and to be fair, I mean, that was 60 years ago, you know, 1960 was. So I would be interested to see if there were like any newer stories, you know, something from the later 2000s, you know, 2010.
A lot of the stuff was kind of current day from what I thought of it. And it just said, most of the UFO stuff was, you know, 60s and 70s. But I mean, who knows? That doesn't mean it's not going on. It's just not getting reported.
True. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, things that when there's weird things going on, people just kind of like, okay, weird things go on there. let's go see something else. And, you know, maybe nobody really goes there anymore.
Well, one of the other things, I was searching around and I came across this website where it had this guy who would take people out on tours and tell them about the forest, whatever. And it said that he went camping there one night. And I think he had somebody with him at least, but it said that when he was camping, they heard what sounded like hooves running through the forest, like horse hooves. And they got out of their tent. And there's nothing there.
I don't know if that part of the world has wild horses. I mean, surely they have deer there in Europe, in Eastern Europe. They have to have deer. They would have like moose or elk. Well, they might have elk. Hell, they might have wild horses for that matter. Just to play devil's advocate with this particular story. Like, there could be...
Oh, yeah, right, for sure.
I mean, there absolutely could be a hooved animal in that particular forest, you know, without being anything too crazy about it. But the gentleman that was camping that heard the horse hooves was somebody who gave tours in that particular forest. So you would think that he would probably know if there was a large mammal or a large deer or something like that. Like, it seemed like he would know if there was something like a wild horse running around there, now that I think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Very good story. Who knows? Very good story. Very interesting. Yeah. So my first story for tonight is called The Winchester Mystery House. This is a fairly popular one in the list of quote-unquote haunted houses. If you haven't heard about it, it's located in Southern California. The house was originally built by Sarah Winchester. So the Winchester Mystery House was built mostly by Sarah Winchester, who is the wife of William Winchester. And William Winchester was the owner of the Winchester Firearm Company. And this house was built around the late 1880s. Now, it's kind of hard to like put a complete date on when it was built, because the building was literally under construction for the entire time that she was alive. Like, they never really quit building. After her husband passed away, that was kind of what they say was her artistic expression. So instead of going out with friends or having parties, she was kind of a homebody who just kept building rooms on rooms on rooms in her mansion here in Southern California. And it also says that she owned 5 or 6 houses there. So she didn't stay at the Winchester house all the time. She stayed at some of her other properties around. But of course, the Winchester house is probably the most famous out of all of those. Now, a lot of people probably have heard as the Winchester house is very maze-like. It has some rooms that are some doors that open up to nothing, that when you look through the window, there's just a wall there. There are some very odd staircases. There are attics, or there are trap doors. There's a lot of weird things about this house. But when I was going through there reading about some of these, they all kind of have like a reason why they were done. Like one of the ones that I was talking about earlier, where the windows and doors don't lead to anything, is because the way that she would build onto the house is she would say, hey, I want a room here. And if the room next to it had a window or door, they didn't rip it out. They just built a new room right on the side of the house. And it was kind of built, I don't want to say haphazardly, because it looks like one house, but it was not just a single construction. It was an add-on, an add-on, add-on. One of the interesting ones is Sarah Winchester was only 4 feet 10 inches tall. So she was a fairly short lady. So when she built some of the staircases for the house, they were made to be comfortable for her to walk up. Now, for you or I, the staircase would look very odd to us because of how small it is. You know, one of the big examples here was there's a staircase that runs 44 steps long, but it only rises up 10 feet. So each step is just a very, I guess it'd be like 4 inches tall, or give or take, maybe 3.5 inches tall, something like that. So each step is a really, really small step compared to what we have today, you know, where our steps, I think, are 6 inches or maybe 7. So when you look at it, you're like, why is it like this? What was she trying to do? And it was just because of her height and the fact that later in life, she wasn't in the best of health. So she wanted to make things easier for her. So she built these weird staircases that worked for her, even if it didn't work for anyone else. some of the other oddness for this house also happened in 1906. If anybody's familiar, Southern California had a huge earthquake in 1906, and it did a lot of damage to the house, a lot of damage. And so that was one of the other things about the house, is that sometimes when they went to go rebuild it afterwards, she just kind of built like how she wanted to build. She wanted this room here. Well, if there wasn't a door, we'll just have it going through another way. So there was pipes coming out of some of the walls. Like I said, the windows and doors things. And it was for her artistic expression. And some of it was from the earthquake. Some of the stories about this house that people find very odd have very explainable reasons why they've happened. Some of the local residents, when Sarah was alive, said they could hear ghostly music coming from the house. Well, Sarah liked playing. She had a pump organ, but she enjoyed playing that. So there were some nights to where she would go to her grand ballroom and play the organ at nighttime. Well, that's where you would get ghostly music from. Another one was, there's a very large bell tower there. According to some people, they said that she built it so she could summon spirits with it. Well, no, it was used for a fire alarm, so that the bell was the tallest portion. So if there was a fire in one of the parts of the house, because the house was huge, they would ring the bell to let everybody know there was a fire in the house. Nothing kind of too scary there. Another one is that because her husband owned the company that manufactured guns, there was a lot of guilt behind that. People thought that she may feel guilty for how many people that her husband's firearms had killed over the years. So that's one of the reasons why she built this weird house, was to kind of help trap the spirits that so they wouldn't haunt her or anything like that. There's no it's very unlikely that's the reason, because unlike today, back when this company was first found, or back when it was founded in about 1880 or so, the company was super successful. People were proud to work for Winchester. They were seen as a very successful, very profitable company. Since this house was owned by the Winchesters, a lot of people today would think that maybe she felt guilty for all the deaths that her husband's company had been attributed to. But you have to remember that it was very different in the 1880s than it is today. And I'm just going to read this paragraph verbatim because it explains it way better than I ever could. So it says, at the turn of the 20th century, the most common belief that still persists regarding the Winchester's house building was that she felt tremendous guilt resulting from all the death caused by Winchester rifles and from inheriting so much money from the arms company. The author claims that it is unlikely Winchester had any guilt, since in the 1880s, the Winchester Repeating Arms Company was seen as a success and the weapons were viewed as a necessity for survival. So it is very unlikely that she felt any guilt about that at all, just because of the different times that they lived in. The 1880s, of course, you know, when you go on and on and on, like, a lot of people thought that Sarah was very superstitious and she was very obsessive. There was a paranormal investigator. His name is Joe Nickel, and he reported that as Winchester aged, particularly after the 1900s, as her health issues grew worse, which included arthritis, missing teeth, and neuritis, she became more private and reclusive. This reluctance to appear in public or to socialize with her peers gave her a mysterious reputation, feeding the gossip in the community and local newspapers, which fueled the rumors that she was superstitious. Winchester's companion of many years, Miss Henrietta Severs, states Winchester had no superstitious beliefs. Winchester's relatives, employees, and gardeners never made claims that she was superstitious, guilt-ridden, or crazed. So that kind of also goes along with, you know, the gun guilt thing. That a lot of people thought that she was very superstitious, that she was in the ghost, but she was just kind of a private person. On top of the fact that once she became ill and not in the best of health, she didn't really want to go on public. She didn't really want to talk to anybody. And the people closer to her said, hey, this is just kind of a normal woman. I'll give you one more example of how much of a homebody she was, is that she, Sarah, actually declined two visits from U.S. presidents. So the story goes is that President William McKinley visited and wanted to visit that particular house because it was even at that time, it was fairly famous in that particular area. And when the president's assistant showed up to make arrangements for him to visit, that she wouldn't even answer the door. Like, they ended up talking to, it was either the gardener or the maid, and said, they said, hey, you know, President McKinley would like to come visit, would like to come see your house. And they told him no, that she doesn't want any visitors. And now, to be fair, this was way later in her life. She was already in really bad health at this particular point. The second time it happened was in 1903. So this would be the next president. And that would have been Theodore Roosevelt. Once again, same thing. The president sent his agents to, you know, hey, I would like to come visit. I would like to come see the place. And this time, instead of them talking to a gardener or the maid, they actually talked to Sarah. And she told him, no, I don't want any visitors. I don't want to be bothered. I just want to, you know, kind of do my own thing. Which kind of fueled the whole speculation that she was doing things that may have been a little weird. You know, oh, I don't want you to come into my house. You might see something that, you know, maybe you'll see something scary or something spooky. When all reality, she just didn't want to host people. I think the last one that's attributed to this house is that some of the local newspapers at the time said that she was holding seances there. And according to what I read here, the Winchester staff, who did spend every single day with Sarah, stated that she had no interest in seances and there's no record of them being held in the house at all. Nevertheless, the newspaper ran an article about it, that she held nightly seances in the Blue Room from midnight till 2 a.m. In addition to the closet seances were unlikely, given that they were usually social events and not done by individuals. And records show that the Blue Room in this house was actually the gardener's bedroom. So she probably wouldn't have been having a seance in the gardener's bedroom. Kind of sounds like one of those, like the Clue category. You know, it was Mr. Mustard with the crowbar in the Blue Room. I don't know. It just,
oh my God.
It just kind of, when I said that, it just kind of, you know, made me think about that. But anyways, yeah. So I guess in conclusion to my particular story, even though everybody thinks this is a very haunted place in the world, it's probably not. A lot of the things that went on there that were reported in the 1900s have very rational explanations about what actually happened. I guess the only other thing I should say about it is this house is currently owned by the descendants of the people that bought the house after Sarah passed away. Their last name is Brown, and it's held by an LLC. They do tours of the place, and they still claim that it is haunted, even though it's probably not. I'd heard of this place, and it was like, I'd always heard about how big of the maze was and, you know, all the ghosts that were around there. And then going through and reading all this, I'm like, interesting. You know, I guess for me, it was, I'm glad I kind of looked into it a little bit more. It gives me a different appreciation of what that house is like, and then how people have kind of perverted it just a little bit, just to try to make money on something that was just a lady with a lot of money that wanted to build something.
I'm glad you did this story, because I thought that I kind of knew the basic gist of the story, but I didn't really until you just went over it. So I'm glad now, because now I'm like, oh, okay, that's how it actually went. Because I mean, all the time you hear stuff, it just kind of, that story will stick with you and it becomes facts in your head.
Yep.
When that's not necessarily the case. So I learned something.
I was going to the Wikipedia, and this house has been featured in so many different films and
really?
Album covers. Yeah, so it says in 1960, the house was used as the house in the movie 13 Ghosts.
Oh.
I don't know that movie, but I remember a movie called Something Ghost, but it was like in the 90s or 2000s, not the 60s.
I think that might be a remake.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. It could be. So in 1966, the house was featured on the album cover of the California rock group Count Five. The tale of the Winchester Mystery House was inspiration for the Haunted Mansion Disney ride, which opened in 1969. I mean, there's just this huge list of things that it has been attributed to. So everybody thinks they know about this house, but in all actuality, it's fake. I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Okay, so I just opened up a IMDb tab, and there is the 13 ghosts of from 1960. There's 13 ghosts from 2001. There's a movie called 13 Erotic Ghosts from 2002. I definitely don't want to watch that. And then there's
Come on, the 13 Laura. For science. Come on. We'll report next week.
Oh my God. Yeah, you report, you let me know. The other movie here is The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, and it says 1985 to 1986 TV series. Ooh. So we have that.
I'll give you the Wikipedia link to put in the show notes, just because if anybody wants to see everything it was involved in, there's like 25. They even did an episode of Mythbusters. It's called The Smell of Fear. In 2012, they did it.
What an oddly titled show.
The build team visited the Winchester Mystery House to look around and later watch one of the scariest movies of all time on a television they set up in the grand ballroom with the purpose of determining if fear does smell different by gathering their sweat samples for testing at the end of the night. While the team watched the movie in the dark, the show's crew randomly made loud noises to increase the frightening experience. So I love Mythbusters. It's one of the best shows I've ever saw because they really follow the scientific method. And they do some of the most wildest things you've ever saw. It ran for a long time. Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman were the two like main guys for it. And to see that they did an episode there is actually pretty cool. I might have to actually go find that episode just so I can watch it.
Definitely do that. Definitely look that up. Mm-hmm. I've seen that show before on TV a long time ago, and it was interesting.
Yeah. I watched a lot of them. I haven't saw all of them, but I've watched a lot for sure.
Kind of wondering how they would even film in that house, because I was looking up. I mean, I know what the outside looks like, but I've never bothered to go look to see the inside. And I was scrolling through pictures as you were talking, and it's very, I mean, there's some very normal looking rooms, but then there's these weird staircases that are small and these railings that just kind of reminded me of how when you'd go to a theme park and the line would wrap around, you know, with the like tape things that you can't, you know, and then herd you through and zigzag you through. There's a room that has like railing like that. It's very weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, it is a weird house. Yeah. There's no doubts about that. Just not haunted.
I don't think it seems like it's haunted. Yeah. But hey, it sells.
So we both learned something this one. Like it.
We did. We definitely did. Okay, so my next one is The Black Forest in Germany, or in German, Schwarzwald. It is located in southwest Germany in the state of Baden-Württemberg. It's covered in dense trees such as fir, pine, oak, and birch, and it allows very little sunlight into these woods, and that is why the Romans gave it the name the Black Forest, due to the lack of sunlight that comes through the trees. Sadly, much of the old forest was destroyed in the 19th century due to logging and deforestation. The forest was replanted with mostly spruce trees, which was then again wiped out by windstorms in the 1990s. And today, much of the forest has grown back to contain the original species, and the forest spans 6,000 kilometers or 1,483 acres. And in this forest, there are castles and traditional villages in the forest that add to the fairy tale-like appeal. Wood carving is a very popular skill here, and it's most likely that the cuckoo clock originated here. It's not for sure, but they did become popular in that region in the 18th century. Now, the Black Forest is actually known for more like stories than actual paranormal activity. So it's kind of unsaid whether there's actually these things or if this is just some kind of folklore or what. But it is said that there are werewolves, friendly dwarves. There is also a dwarf who steals women, brings them back to his underwater lair amongst the nymphs, and holds them hostage there. There are witches and a headless horseman seen riding on a white horse. So the reason why I chose this forest was because this is basically where a lot of the fairy tales come from. The Grimm brothers, Jacob and Wilhelm, lived in Germany, and their father died, which left the mother of these children a widow with six children, including Jacob and Wilhelm. So they left one day to find some work to make money for the family. They began working in a library, and while working in this library, they talked to many people, and they would collect fairy tales. And they would collect these fairy tales from all over Germany, and it's just old literature and stories passed down through folklore. So the Grimm brothers collected all these stories, and they altered the versions of these stories and added to the tales that they heard. Many of the tales they told took place in the Black Forest. It's unknown if these stories came specifically from the forest, but many of these tales can actually be linked back to the forest. Much of the tale's scenery resemble dark eerie forests, fairy tale or gingerbread looking houses such as Hansel and Gretel, and enchanting castles. So they took their collection of stories and they published it in 1812. This was their first volume under the publisher Kinder und Hausmärchen. It was meant for adults to read, and some of the stories in this book were Hansel and Gretel, Rapunzel, Little Red Riding Hood, Cinderella, Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty. These fairy tales are much darker than your normal Disney princess version. For example, and I'm just going to read this right off of the source I found because it tells it very well. So for example, this is where the fairy tale of Snow White came from. A small town named Bad Wilgenge is said to be the inspiration for Snow White. The Count's daughter, Margaretha von Waldeck, was poisoned at the age of 21 in the 16th century. She was a German countess born in 1533, and local records state that she was an exceptional beauty. She was named after her mother, Margaretha, who died when she was only 4 years old. Her father, King Philip V, remarried Katrina von Hatzfeld, and apparently the new mother was not very fond of Philip's children, so he sent many of them off to live with relatives, and Margaretha was 16 when she was sent to live with her uncle, Johann Circina, in Brussels at the Valkenburg Castle. As she was presented in court, she caught the eye of three high-standing nobles, including Prince Philip II of Spain, who fell hopelessly in love with her. The King of Spain did not approve of this match, as he expected his son to marry for the gain of the kingdom. An alleged assassin was hired, and Margaretha fell slowly into a serious illness at the age of 21. Many of her friends commented that they believed she had been poisoned by degrees. Her last will and testament was written in a shaky hand, convincing historians that her death was indeed from unnatural causes. So over the years, these fairy tales will be altered and so that they can be easily marketed for children. And since the original published date, they have also been translated into 160 more languages. And that's what I have for that. And I chose that because I felt like, I mean, fairy tales are huge. It's, you know, there's books, there's movies, there's tons and tons of Disney movies that are made off of that. And it just completely has influenced pop culture throughout the years. So I thought it was pretty neat to go back and find out where this originated from. Because these were not specifically the Grimm brothers' stories, but they were the first ones to collect them and publish them and then put them in a novel.
I think it's kind of interesting that I knew that the Grimm brothers' actual fairy tales were quite a bit darker. And I was sitting here thinking, I don't think I've actually ever read the original stories, but you know, like the original Grimm brothers stories. I don't think I've ever read them before.
I did a little bit of research into them a while ago for another project that I was possibly going to start, but that never came to anything. And I think I did save my research. And they're just very, very scary stories. And I believe that one of the Grimm brothers was like basically that horror sells. So that was kind of his idea on that. So, I mean, I guess it was just ended up being better marketing that they could tell these stories to children and make children's books out of them or whatever. But
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, you're going to sell something that people want to read, you know, something they can't get somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Right. If you look up pictures of this forest, it's absolutely beautiful. It is very dark and enchanting. And the towns and the villages just look very fairy tale-esque, if that's a word. But
yeah, I mean, I could see like where the, you know, a lot of people think of fairy tales as like Disney. I mean, that's always the big one, right? And like some of the older Disney movies, the ones that were made like in the 60s or whatnot, I would imagine if you look at that, those style of houses and the woods and stuff and compared it to what the Black Forest looks like, that you would see a lot of similarities between the two.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Learned something else new today. I like it. All right. So for the final story for tonight, I picked one that I've never heard of before. This one popped up in a list of scary, spooky places. And it's called Poveglia Island. And it is located in the country of Italy. It is about 2.5 miles south of Venice. And supposedly you can see part of the island from Venice, but you can really see it from something called Lido di Venezia, which Italian is not my native language. If I butchered it, I'm very sorry. As it's right off the coast of the Lido. I'm super shocked that I've never heard of this place before. This islands, because there is three of them, a lot of really bad things have happened on these islands. So the islands go way back. They were first colonized during the 7th century. The people that lived there had their own little community. It's not a very big island or big islands. And it kind of just progressed through. Different people lived there. Italy took it over in the 9th century. But not really a whole lot of stories up until about, I think it was 1776. At that particular point, the Venice government took formal control of it, and they initially used it for a customs office. So basically, any ships that were coming into Venice had to stop at Poveglia Island and, you know, declare that they're carrying this, they're carrying that. And then after that, it was also used as a site, since it's so isolated, they used it as a site for plague control. Now, this is not the Black Plague from the 13th century, but this was just another plague. Anyways, so the modern, quote unquote, modern history of this place started in 1793, which was when it was a customs office. Two ships stopped there to check in, and it was noted that there was several cases of the plague on board. At that point, since the island, since they were stopped at the island, they quarantined the ships so it wouldn't get to the mainland. You know, you don't want to spread plague all over the place. So not only is it a customs site now, but it is also a plague control site where basically they just keep all the plague victims there. And this is not the only island that they use for quarantining plague victims. There was two other ones called Lazzaretto Nuovo and Lazzaretto Vecchi. To be fair, I don't know where either one of those located, but whenever those were full, Poveglia was kind of the overflow for all the rest of the plague victims. After the plague had subsided, they still used Poveglia Island for quarantine stations so that the ships had to stop there to make sure they were, you know, healthy, they weren't carrying anything bad to it. But here's where it gets interesting. The smaller island, so if you look on Google Map, the smaller island, which is in the southern side, it's kind of octagonal shape. One of the rumors is that 50% of the earth making up this island is actually human ash. So they had so many plague victims die that they didn't know how to deal with all the bodies. So there's a couple stories. One of them, they said they burned them and they used the ash to make the island bigger. The other one says that instead of being burned, they basically dug huge pits and just dumped the bodies in there for them to decay. And then they were buried afterwards. So, and the number of victims is over 100,000 people on this little bitty island were either burned or possibly buried, them having the plague. So starting off, small island, 100,000 people died there. Pretty bad place. When it gets a little worse. After the plague subsided, and I believe it was the mid-18th century, about 1850 or so, they opened up an asylum there, an insane asylum. It doesn't say how many beds there were, but the building itself looks fairly substantial. I mean, there's a lot of buildings on the island, but the biggest one looked fairly substantial. So it was an insane asylum. One of the doctors there was known for experimenting on the insane patients. He performed more lobotomies than probably anyone else. Now we have the double whammy. Crazy doctor doing bad stuff with insane patients. Plague victims. Those are the two main sources of hauntings at this particular island. I will say that the island is currently owned by the Venice government, and it is off limits to most people, although you can get permission, and usually permission is granted for like film crews or photography projects or research. But it was kind of amusing that me and Laura, we were looking earlier, we pulled it up on Google Maps just to see where it was located. And on the biggest island in the lower left-hand corner, you can see what looks like a group of people standing on the island. And you can see their boats parked in the little canal there. So, and the picture, according to Google, was taken in 2023. So, I mean, it's hard to tell from a satellite view, but it looks like there's people there today. But it's been closed since 1976. There's been, you know, there's nothing left on there. All the buildings are in disrepair. The buildings are not safe to go in at all because they're crumbling. There's trees growing through some of them. And with that many people that had been experimented on or lobotomized there, they say there quite a few, you know, you can hear a lot of strange things because the islands are, I don't want to call them wooded, but they're vegetated. You know, there's trees, there's lots of grasses and things, and that people would hear things, hear footsteps. They would see, like, I don't want to say ghosts, but like see things in the forest or in the woods, I guess, for a better way of putting it. I found this one, this particular island, and you know, maybe there's other islands that are this bad, but this one just really stuck out at me of one that I've never heard of, especially with its history.
I haven't heard of it either, and it sounds just so much worse than I was even picturing.
Have you ever heard of them burning so many plague victims that they could actually make an island bigger? I think that's the one that really stood out to me because, you know, like ash, there's not a whole lot to ash.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a whole lot. But I guess if you burn 100,000 people, that might be a little bit of ash.
Yeah, just a little bit maybe. So the other thing I had thought of when you were talking, where did they put the bodies from the people in the insane asylum? Because you know people definitely passed away in there. Because, I mean, you pretty much back in the day, you would just kind of dropped your quote-unquote loved ones off and that's it.
That's actually a pretty good question. I didn't see anything about that, but you're probably right. I mean, I'm sure that they were either buried on the island or burned in one of the ovens or dropped in the sea. They probably didn't do that because it's way too close to some of the islands. Some of the more populated portions of Venice are fairly close to that island. So they probably didn't dump bodies in the ocean, I wouldn't think, because they would wash up somewhere.
I mean, who knows? And yeah, I mean, probably not, but they did some wild shit back in the day. Like, look at lobotomies, for example.
Oh, you know,
I hate hearing that so much. Ugh.
We could do a whole episode on lobotomies, to be
fair. No, thank you. Yes, we could, but no, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty bad topic. That's
I'm
going to sure.
pass on that one.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. I would like to visit there because the island actually looks fairly nice. Like, I mean, it doesn't look like it's trash because nobody goes there, right? Like, it would be kind of cool to just like wander around the old buildings. But I don't think I would ever go there at nighttime, though. Like, I think that would be super, super creepy. Like, on a moonless night, you know? Like, nah.
I mean, I would probably maybe go if there was a bunch of people there.
I'm glad we got to do this episode. I feel like this was one of the more interesting ones we've done. I've learned a lot this time.
Well, yeah. No, I've never heard of that place. So there's another thing.
It's nice to get back here. You know, I've missed doing these. It's been fun.
Alrighty, guys. So You know the spiel. If you have a true paranormal experience, email them to us because I really would love to do a listener stories episode. Email us at midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. You can find us on Instagram at that same handle. And yeah, we will talk to you next time.